Okay. I just wanted to put out there that remember that today is one day, but tomorrow is a brand new day. So whatever happens today, be it good or bad, tomorrow is a new day. And believe in yourself and believe that the future will be bright. Every day is a new day, and you never know what's going to happen around the corner. So just believe in yourself that you can get through the day. And yeah, that's how I live my life day to day.
Welcome to Professor of Perseverance podcast, where people share their stories of life tragedies, of accepting adversities, begin battling, and conquer challenges to not only survive difficulties, but also thrive in life. Are you having a bad day? Do you need help in overcoming adversities? Do you need help mastering courage to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, then this podcast is for you. Professor of Perseverance podcast will inspire you to face challenges head on in life and provide motivation to be a leader for others by setting examples of winning through difficulties while encouraging people to live life to the fullest. Your host of Professor of Perseverance podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
Welcome to the Professor of Perseverance podcast. I'm Dr. James Perdue, aka the Professor of Perseverance. Have I got someone for you today? I'm telling you, have I got someone? Yeah, I got someone for you today. You're going to love her story, her enthusiasm, her love to will, to help and be successful and help people with disability as much as possible. And while we're doing that, let's go on and get her bio. Louise Sertzis has been dealing with a physical disability, multiple sclerosis, MS, for 20 years, and have been on long-term disability for 13 of those years. She is now an advocate for the disabled, trying to make society aware that we have the same wants and needs as our able-bodied counterparts. Amen to that, sister. We want the white picket fence like everybody else. We want the dog named Spot. Actually, I got a dog named Ricardo, but we want the same thing like everyone else. While studying for her university degree, she was diagnosed with MS, therefore having a different life experience than most. Her strong desire to help individuals with differing abilities became a main focus. Louise went through a very dark point in her life where everything seemed impossible and hopeless, but she was able to emerge with a sense of purpose and excitement for the future. She felt of being reborn and ready to start life, living life once again. She started an Advocate Freedom and created the Handy Pack, and we'll discuss this Handy Pack here in a little bit. Advanced Freedom is driven and inspired by the lives of people with physical disabilities. Louise strives to solve the challenges of mobility, comfort, and safety as she faces this challenge every single day. It is her mission to create functional and accessible products for people with physical disabilities, such as her Handy Pack. So welcome to the show, Louise. Thank you for being on here.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, this is going to be fun. We'll have fun. So, and I tell people with me doing this podcast, that if 1 million people hear this, great. If 10 people hear it, great. Or if I just do this and get all this enjoyment and motivation and inspiration for myself, it's even great and better. So,
yes, it is. Any step is perfect. If it's just for you or if it's for a lot of people, it's great.
Exactly.
One person is as good.
That's as many. What did most people say? If I could just get that one person, you know,
yes.
They said that one person. And I tell people I'm greedy. I want more than one.
Yes.
But again, if we get that one to get started. All right, Louise, before we get started, tell us about what the young Louise was like growing up. You know, if a curveball was thrown at you and you took a hit, were you the type to get up, ready to move on, fight? I mean, were you just, was this already in your DNA, in your blood, that you're going to overcome?
I think I was always that little girl who wanted something more and who always fought for what she believed in. Or if it was something that went wrong in my life, even then I was wanting to either fix it or make it as best as I could. I was very active as a young person. I played a lot of sports. I was the type of person who loved to be the life of the party in so many words. Basically, I didn't fret from talking to anyone. I was that person who just wanted to excel.
Excellent. Excelling, excellent. So I'm a sports person myself. I don't know if you can tell it back here in the back here, but yeah, I'm a sports person myself. So I think sports can teach you a lot about life, winning and losing, and help prepare you for life.
Yes, and basically how to deal with upsets and heartbreaks. And although it's very different from a disease, if I couldn't perform well in the sports that I played, or even in academics, if I did not achieve what I wanted, it taught me how to strive for better. So I think in life, I think that whether it's sports or academics or anything else that may happen in your life, I think it shapes who you then become and how you deal with issues that you may face.
And I think it's one problem with today's society is they're so used to texting, all this stuff on the computer, on their cell phone, that they don't know how to handle face-to-face issues.
Interaction. Yes.
Interactions. And I think it's going to hurt in the long run if people don't get a hold of it now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like when I was growing up, obviously I didn't have the cell phone or the iPod and the iPad and whatever else they have now. I was very much that person who wanted to phone people or who wanted to get out and play rather than sit inside and play on the computer or texting people. I would rather talk.
That's right. That's right. That face-to-face interaction beats anything that hiding behind a tablet and phone and of course, you know as well as I do, people are going to use things the wrong way. And that's when the bully is going to make them fake accounts and bully and whatever else. So, all right, Louise, hey, thank you again. And all right, tell us your story. You said you was at university working on your degree when you were diagnosed. So if you can give us more of that story on how things came about that.
You know what? I started my university and I was absolutely fine. Me and my friends or my boyfriend at the time, we went away on vacation in the sun and I came back and felt the effects of numbness in my legs. And I felt this because I was shaving. So at the time, the feeling just wasn't right. And it took me a while to go to the many doctor's appointments to try to figure out what this is. And coincidentally enough, I was studying the effects of MS and neurological conditions. So I was pushing to find out more. And so it took me well over a year to get fully diagnosed because the doctors were saying it was all in my head and that I was better off to go see a psychologist rather than try to think that anything was wrong physically. So I ended up getting diagnosed with MS. And rather than finishing my degree in Ottawa is where I went to school. So rather than finishing it there, I just finished it at home because it was just easier on me. Emotionally, I was at that point a wreck, and I needed the support of my family and friends at home.
And you just went into the next question here, explaining about your support system when all this took account and everything like this. And, you know, how is your support system?
My support system then was amazing, family and friends, and now it's great as well. I have my husband, I have still my family and my friends, but back then it was great, even though it was the worst point of my life for me. Just dealing with the diagnosis and the fear of the unknown and what was going to happen tomorrow or next year, I had no idea. And just reliving or rethinking about what I went through, it was the hardest point in my life. But I was able to not deal with it, but just accept what was and try to live life day by day. And that was hard.
Oh, yes. And it's definitely the uncertainty of not knowing is difficult from there, because, what you don't know, you don't know. And so you don't know what's going to happen the next day, or what happens if this happens, how do I take care of it? What happens if this happens? And then, or you go, I didn't know that was going to happen. So you're the certainty. And I'm with you with the family support. I already know that if it wasn't for my mom, who raised three boys basically by herself, but if it wasn't for her and my two brothers and my grandmother at the time, I don't know where I'd be at, because I've talked to other people that didn't have that support like you and I had, and they were in a nursing home later on. That's where they found themselves, because they didn't have that support.
Right, exactly. So I think that initial support is very important, not only to how you deal with having a disease, but how you continue to live your life. And whether it's on a positive outlook or negative, I think that having that initial support teaches you how to be more accepting and more positive about life.
Exactly. So, and it's Zig Ziglar. I've said this before other times. Zig Ziglar says having a positive attitude doesn't guarantee that everything's going to work out right, but it's better to have a positive attitude because you can handle it better than a negative attitude.
Right.
And then whatever happens, you can go from there. Yes. So
definitely.
Hey, help us understand what MS is. What does it do basically? What is it?
So multiple sclerosis is the full name for the condition I suffer from. And basically what it is it's a disease of your central nervous system. So essentially your brain and your spinal cord. And the symptoms can range from a whole slew of things. For me, it started with numbness, and right now I'm in a wheelchair. So obviously it starts light, and it you can be diagnosed with three possible diagnoses. So just relapsing, remitting, where you'll get an attack and you'll feel numbness, or for some people it's in their eyes or loss of balance. And then the next one would be secondary progressive, which is stronger than the first. So you'll get an attack and you won't heal perfectly fine. So you'll be left with residual complications that never really go away. Then the third kind of MS would be progressive MS, primary progressive MS, where you just get an attack and you never heal. So you don't heal partially or fully, you just keep on declining. And for me, I was diagnosed with the least form, the relapsing remitting kind of MS. And, you know, for me, it went away at the beginning and I was fine. You would never know I had it. And then over the years, then, you know, now I'm with secondary progressive MS. So, like, I don't really feel getting an attack anymore. I'll get into that a little bit later, but because I've had many different procedures that change the course of my disease.
And that's another thing I want to get into is what other research or things did you travel anywhere to try to find a basic cure or something to make life easier, something to make the disease be more resistant, not resistant, but subside?
Okay. Well, the first and the major procedure I had was a bone marrow transplant. It wasn't, I didn't have cancer, but it was I had a bone marrow where it was just under research at the time, and only 24 people in Canada had that procedure done. So what they did was they gave me a bone marrow transplant. So they essentially took all my bone marrow out and they cleansed it. And after that, they gave me high dose chemotherapy. So when I say high dose, your typical cancer patient would have a treatment once every week. I had a treatment every single day for 10 days. So on paper, I was, I don't want to say literally dead, but very close, like 0.01, 0.001, all my counts of my blood work. So essentially it, for them, they were rebooting my immune system to hopefully have an immune system that would regrow and MS wouldn't be a part of it. So looking back at that now, I think that saved me as far as stopping the disease progression. So I haven't had an attack now for probably 20 years, I want to say.
Well, that's awesome.
Oh, not 20 years, sorry. 15 years. So
you're lost.
Yeah. So thank you. I'm glad I did it. Looking back at it, it was hard recovery because I had so much chemotherapy. I lost all my hair. I didn't feel well for at least 3 years after I had this procedure done, but I've been attack free for so long that I'm very grateful that I had the opportunity to do it.
I feel that if willing, people want to, that they ought to go for research, and it may not help them as much as they would like at the moment, but it's going to help in the future for other people. And
right.
Not everybody does it, and I'm glad you did. I've been to two or three researches, but my stuff's been here in the States. I haven't left anywhere to go do any research, participant anywhere. So
right.
I believe we should do, I mean, do as much as you can with it, because it's only going to help in the long run for the research and help get rid of it and make it better for other people in the future.
Right. Like, honestly, if you would have talked to me 10 years ago, you wouldn't have understood a word I had to say. So after the bone marrow transplant, probably maybe I want to say 7 or 8 years later, I went to Bulgaria for yet another procedure that basically opened up my airways in my neck. Not airways, sorry, my jugular vein in my neck.
Mm-hmm.
For MS people, it is thought that their jugular vein in their neck is narrowed. So it kind of gets smaller as, you know, so I had that, they put a balloon in there and they expanded my airways. And the amount of benefit I received from that has been tremendous. My voice, my the fact that I was cold in my feet, in my hands. I also, too, in my eyesight. It's like I don't know. It's like I had a film over my my eyes. And when I got it done, it's like I could see vibrant colors everywhere. And before, it was just very dull. I thought it was normal, but I was so used to seeing that particular way that I didn't know any better. So I agree with you about traveling to different research, you know, things that may help or possibly cure.
And I mean, definitely when we go to these researches, we're hoping we're going to benefit dramatically is what we're hoping on. But again, if it's just enough, again, where you were able to speak for people to understand easier, that was well enough for that, I would think.
Yes, yes.
You know, so.
And even for me to back then, like I had issues trying to search for my words. Or you would ask me a question and I would answer you a good minute after you asked me because I was trying to formulate what it was going to say. And mm-hmm. I was very inaudible. Like I would speak and nobody would understand me. And I just chose not to speak because before that procedure, because nobody could understand me. And they always asked me, what did you say? And mm-hmm. I was tired of not being understood.
And I can see, especially when you're out in public and then someone comes asking, you try to answer them and they're going, excuse me, what was that? I can see where that would be frustrating as well. I've had a few times, I don't know if you had anything like it. It's kind of funny now, but and it still happens. But I drive and I have my own van with a lift. So my brother and friends, we would go out and eat somewhere. My mom would go out and eat somewhere. And on good sunny days, I leave my van doors wide open, the lift down, so I can just get in and go instead of having to open, close, and do everything and wait. So we just leave it open.
Right.
Leave. How many people come up to me and go like this? And they don't come up to me. They come up to my brother or my mom or my friend. They'll say, you left your van doors open. And they'll point at me and say, it's his van. They look at me. And then they say to them again, well, I just letting you know that you left your doors open. I mean, I can understand the frustration, especially if you're inaudible and then. And then people are going, oh, what'd you say? And then they want to try to, and I'm putting words into people's mouth, but I would think you would feel that they're trying to talk to you like a child or something when they're going, what did you say?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely. And, you know, I actually had people say to me, oh my gosh, like, what happened? But, you know, I'm an open book now, so it doesn't matter. But back then, I was just like, I have MS, you know, and I felt very violated, like, even that they, just the way they asked, like, you're horrible. What is it that you have? That's how I felt inside.
And some countries that, and I'm not getting into religious and everything, but they believe that things happen because you've got the gods or spirits mad at you, and that's the reason something happened to you. And there's other countries that are like that.
Wow.
And again, I'm not getting into religious and all that, but what if for whatever reason they think they upset the spirits or whoever, universe, and they got even with them.
So, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that it's sad it happened. Now let's do the best we can and move on.
Yes, exactly.
Now, Louise, this was kind of what was in your bio about how you felt a lot of things being impossible, and I'm assuming that's as your disease was progressing, that you were losing more independence, made it feel impossible.
Yes.
You know, when you had, and I'm assuming you still have bad days. I mean, unfortunately, I have a lot more better days than I do have bad days, but I still have my bad days. And so I'm assuming you might. And if you do, how do you deal with your bad days?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because my bad days are what used to be my good days. So for me to say I have had a bad day, I can't really compare it to what used to be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm trying to explain that my bad days now are, yes, they're bad. For me, anybody else would say they're horrible. And mm-hmm. But I would just say, well, it's bad. So, you know, like, tomorrow's a new day, and try to think of it as a day-to-day process rather than, oh my gosh, it's the absolute worst. Before, I used to think that way. And now that I have a different mindset to isolate my bad days or hours or what have you, and be able to look and say, okay, but it's a new day tomorrow, or wake up the next morning and say, okay, I'm going to start this day off like different than the last, and hoping for a better outcome. And that for me has worked. You know, it's hard to compare. I can't compare myself to other people because every disease and every condition is so different. But I can say that it has gotten a lot better than it once was.
Well, and I should mention this earlier. I have a friend named Kim. Her, one of my good friends, and her, they got married, and she was in college, I think, when she developed her MS as well. And she's got to be, I guess she's close to my age, and I'm 55. So she'd be 53, 54, 55, something like that. And she has MS, but she has been bedridden, I'm guessing now it's been 10 years. And like you said, even though other people have the same disease, it attacks differently.
Yes.
And I was telling just someone this week that I'm a C5-6 quadriplegic and I can drive. And whenever I meet another person that's a C5-6 and they're not driving, I don't understand it. But again, just because their level of injury is the same doesn't mean inside all the nerves have broken up the same. And so right. That's what people has got to remember. I kind of laugh, you know, they had that, I don't know how they got in Canada, but we got a blue sign with a stick man in a wheelchair for our disability. And I'm thinking, they think we all look like that. And I said, big fat as I am, they ought to have a bigger sign, you know, one with a belly on it or something, but they think we're all the same. So they generically do everything. And people don't think that, it's just like people have cancer, but it's still affecting different ways.
Yes.
So, yes. All right. I haven't told you, so I'm glad you're on. You're doing awesome. I appreciate it. You're doing awesome. All right, Louise. Now, I'm one of these that I believe that most people with a disability are very, very creative, because if we can't do something, then we may try to adapt that so we can do something. You know, you got all these adapted equipment to eat with nowadays, adapted equipment to drive with. People's come up with inventions to help the disabled the best they can. But I believe that we are our own products of what we can design and make, because we're firsthand knowledge of it. So now let's get into this. Being very creative, how did you come up with HandiPack?
Oh my, I came up with the handy pack. Well, it's been well over 2 years that I have thought about it and have developed it. But it was because when me and my husband travel, I was always so dependent on him. Could you get from the back of my wheelchair, could you get whatever I need? So whether it was a passport or my money or what have you, I was always relying on him to get me everything. I had zero independence. And that to me was what sparked this idea of coming up with my own bag, because nothing I saw was in the front of you so that it was easily accessible and functional for the user. So during my late nights of being up till 3 or 4 in the morning, I thought in my head, okay, I want, first of all, the handy pack is a 2-part bag. Where the first part sits on your lap and your phone, your keys, your sunglasses, your wallet, whatever it is that is most meaningful to you that you would use every day, you essentially have an area where you can put even your tablet. It can fit in this. And for me, that was the answer, because I no longer had to depend on somebody else to get things from the back of me. Because for me, my core is very weak, and getting things at the back was just impossible for me. So now I developed or have thought about this. And then the second part of the bag is from your knee to the top of your foot. So it is quite a larger bag that could fit groceries or shopping. If you go out clothes shopping or traveling, it's a great bag for a carry-on bag, because its maximum weight is 15 pounds, which is the same thing for airlines, where they have a maximum for your carry-on. So you can actually carry everything you need in the cabin with you rather than having to check bags in and not have your essentials right with you. So for me, that was a huge thing. But, you know, the size of the bag is such that I can do many different things with it. And it's not secured to your wheelchair. It's secured to you. So it doesn't matter if you're a manual wheelchair or if you have an electric wheelchair, it will fit regardless because it's attached to you.
Well, I think it's a good design, unique design. And let's go ahead and show your promotion. You call it a promotion or do you call it your commercial?
No, promotion is good. Yeah.
I like commercials. It makes you sound like you're doing something good with money, making money. Yeah, here's our commercial for our podcast today. I know you can't see it, but in YouTube land, you will get to see it.
It was something that I didn't expect in my life. I needed to use a wheelchair full time, and I wasn't comfortable with wheelchair bags that existed. I wanted to come up with a design that was more functional and accessible for me. That's where the Handy Pack was born.
The lap bag portion of the Handy Pack is secured by a waistband that attaches with the ease of magnets. Magnetic straps secure the lower bag to the lap pack, and two beverage holders are located by the user's knees. The lap pack, which can be used on its own, is perfect for personal items such as glasses, wallets, and keys, while the lower bag is perfect for heavier items such as laptops or groceries. The lower bag can also attach to the back of the chair for additional storage.
The power of just being free and being able to do more things on my own. So having a bag that is functional and accessible to the user, it was important before to be independent. I needed that break of just feeling that I could do more.
Rock star. There you go. You look like a rock star. That was good. So anybody that wants to go and review and look at this, you can go to YouTube and look up Handy Pack. It's the Handy is an I at the end, not a Y. H-A-N-D-I Pack, P-A-C. And you can go check that out on YouTube. Is there anything else that maybe they can, they of course, go to any of your websites, or what's the website they can go directly to order from?
AdvancedFreedom.com.
AdvancedFreedom.com, and you can go order your own personal handy pack and buy one for a friend. They need one as well. So go ahead and do that. Now, I was going to leave you off with this last question, but we're almost forgetting something very new. You have been designated, you have been recognized as 2020 Top 25 Influential Women of Canada. You've just now been recognized that this week. How awesome is that? Let me clap my hand the best I can. That is awesome. Top 25 Influential Women of 2020 of Canada. Watch out for moving on up. So congratulations to that.
Thank you so much for congratulating me on being the top 25 women of influence. It has come as a complete shock, but thank you very much. I'm very grateful for everything.
It's well deserved. It's well deserved that you're in there. So now let's finish up here. Louise, give us a final thought of someone is going through some situation, some trial or tribulation, some adversity, some challenge, whatever it may be. Give us a positive, inspirational, motivational outlook, something that can help them get through part of that time, all the time, piece of the time, through the next day.
Okay. I just wanted to put out there that remember that today is one day, but tomorrow is a brand new day. So whatever happens today, be it good or bad, tomorrow is a new day. And believe in yourself and believe that the future will be bright. Every day is a new day, and you never know what's going to happen around the corner. So just believe in yourself that you can get through the day. And yeah, that's how I live my life day to day. So
there you
keep
go.
Your head up and believe that you can do it.
Well, and that's a good way to live your life is like that, is to believe in yourself. Because if you don't believe in yourself, how can you expect anybody else to? And
exactly.
And remember, today is a day. It's over with. Try to put that issue behind you. And you may not be able to. It may take 4 or 5 days. It may take a month. But each day will get better as it goes along.
Yeah.
Lynn, thank you for being here. Again, go to advancedfreedom.com to get you a handy pack. Buy one for a friend to help them out. And thank you again for being here. Hey, I'm Dr. James Perdue. Thank everyone for coming. Hey, if you hadn't liked, subscribe, share, go and get this message out for everybody that you know can help. And thank everyone for being here. Thank you for the people coming for the replay. I'm Dr. James Perdue, the professor of perseverance at my podcast. Do something today, tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.